back to the Fan Morning Show.
You were so angsty.
I was so angsty.
Jeez.
Yeah. I used to play RuneScape. Remember that game?
I just picture your parents down in the kitchen as you're just blaring all these angsty teen pop punk albums. Like,
At this point, Green Day was just stadium rock anyway.
Whatever. I liked it, so.
Sure.
You know Eilish, dramatic Eilish, was blaring this with intent, you know?
Oh,
when
yeah.
her parents, they told her that she couldn't have her Ardeen whatever.
Yeah. You have enough DC shoes.
Yeah, you're not going to Claire's.
You're not getting to go to the mall to see your friends today, Eilish. Yeah.
No, you can't.
And then she went upstairs I'll walk alone. Like, that's her.
Also, she lived in a small town. She's like, Mom, just drive me to the mall. I got to go to HMV.
That's exactly right.
The response.
All right, let's bring in our next guest. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Joined by Jennifer Botterill, former forward, three-time Olympic gold medalist, and current Sportsnest analyst.
You work here.
I do work here. What's our company's name? Hi, Jennifer. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just got all nervous because I used to be my favorite player, and I just got all choked up.
Used to be. What? You're not a fan anymore.
She's saying you're washed.
No, guys, stop it. Well, welcome to the show. We're talking our angsty teenage days where we listened to pop punk. What was your go-to song when you're driving to hockey and you're like getting in the zone?
I know. See, I feel like I was usually always on the little pop trends, but if I had to go a little more, Pearl Jam. I feel like when I was young, there's a little nice Pearl Jam in there to get y'all focused and zoned in.
That's right. I think all my memories of music are related to hockey, though. Like what I listened to before a game or our pregame warm-up mixes. Like I think that is my biggest tie into sports and music is what did I listen to when I was on this team?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. I feel like even the university days, no question about that. Bon Jovi was a big one with the Harvard hockey locker room.
And really?
Then Team Canada, there was a few of us that would have, honestly, a little dance party before we head out there. So
when you played against Dartmouth, did they do their Dixie Chicks Not Ready to Make Nice thing?
I don't think they had that in my era.
Okay, that was our song, and we used to sing it before every game, out on the concourse, and the other team would be watching. So I didn't know how long that dates back, but it's apparently a tradition. So
okay, I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't think so, or unless I've erased it from my memory.
You probably would have. It wasn't great. So we've been talking about the Leafs, obviously, and their first quarter of the season. But last couple nights ago, you were on the panel and talking about what are the best teams in the Canadian division or are up here in Canada, and nobody was really buying in on the Leafs.
This is an ambush, by the way.
So what does it take to get the Leafs in that conversation?
Everyone agrees the Leafs are playing really well, but we had to pick one team that at this point is looking the best in Canada, and I don't think if many people can deny that Calgary has been incredible in terms of what they bring. But that's not anything against the Leafs. I think everybody thinks that they've really shifted in the way that they're playing. They've had an amazing run. You even look at their last game on Wednesday night, and how many people were rolling and producing offensively, but the effort that they put forward to get Sandin with the 3 points and his contributions, them giving credit to Richie. So I think everybody believes, comments from Riley over the last few weeks on how this team, the Leafs, are having conversations about how they want to play in tight games, how they want to play late in the game. So it's not just something everybody's assuming, but it's a team realizing that they need to buy in and they need to make these adjustments to play strong defensively, to take part pride in that aspect of their game. So, no, the Leafs are doing incredibly well, and I think everybody certainly thinks that this is a team that has, all the tools they need to do really well when it comes to playoff time. But there were a couple other teams that deserved a little credit as well in that one discussion.
Yeah, and the Flames beat the Leafs, right? That's what happened when they played each other, because that would only line up with the who's the best team.
Mm-hmm.
Flames won in overtime, right? It was 2-1 Flames?
Something like that.
No, it was 2-1 Leafs. Well, the Leafs won. That's right, the Leafs. The Leafs beat the Flames.
Yes, but there's details with the Flames in terms of how some of their players are playing. Markstrom has 5 and the team 7 shutouts. So there's a few things, and they do play a style of hockey that is often comparable to how you want to play in playoff hockey for mm-hmm. Calgary.
So when do you believe that the Oilers could be in that discussion? If they're, if not now with their 12-2 streak, is there any mm-hmm. way that they kind of start to top those power rankings?
Well, they do as well. And that's what's great. We've got, you know, these few teams in Canada that are playing really well, and there's lots to talk about. I mean, it's always fun to tune in to see what the Oilers are going to do next with the highlights from Draisaitl and McDavid. And even Gretzky, right, is giving them a ton of credit mm-hmm. lately, of what the dynamics like about what he feels that this team can do together for the team dynamic as well. Like I said, of course they've got all the amazing. Their defense has been playing well too, in terms of breakouts and getting the players the puck when they need to. But these guys are on another level right now with their style of play. So yeah, I think all of these teams are in the conversation mm-hmm. that they can do really well.
So we can backtrack on that narrative that was floating around a little bit last season that the North Division wasn't the greatest division and that those teams just looked kind of inflated because they were playing lesser teams. Do you believe that? Okay, no, they've proved themselves. Like these Canadian teams are definitely in the conversation regardless of their realigned division last year.
Yes, I believe so. I also feel like the teams that we've been talking about and even Winnipeg, I mean, they've got a strong lineup too that they're in the mix. I also feel like they're all teams that have learned things over the past year and a half or year and a quarter on where we're at right now in the season to how things went last year, what they need to do better. So there seems to be a collective buy-in, a recognition of where they need to be better to be more consistent, to be more competitive in tough games. And I think that you can see that across the board from the teams we've been chatting about here in Canada.
So we led today's show with, hey, what was the question from the first, or what was the story of the first quarter of the Leafs season for all of us? I'm curious what you think, mm-hmm. what you think it is.
Oh, yes. I think Campbell's a big story that on how well he's done, how poised he seems to be with attention, with doing well, with managing his playing time and his workload. That's one. For me, I think Riley's another one, just his consistency, how well he's played. The bottom six on how well in forwards that your third and fourth lines have been playing. And I think that's a big one. Now, not everybody has to get points every single night to evaluate how, you know, if you're playing well. And for the Leafs to have this third and fourth line that knows their role, that knows what to do, that battles hard and even does create offensive opportunities. Spezza with the goal, you saw Matthews' reaction mm-hmm. on the bench the other night, right? I mean, you know, credit to Richie for doing little things. This is just a team that's going to appreciate, you know, what every player is bringing to each shift and bringing to the table. So I think those are a few elements if you go by position. Those are sort of three big ones.
It's funny because when the season started, it felt so weighty in terms of, God, how are we going to cover this team for 82 games? Because no mm-hmm. one's going to care about anything they do. Because it's all about playoffs, right? You remember Stewie
right.
before the season started, Anthony Stewart just constantly being like, playoffs, it's all about the playoffs, mm-hmm. you got to get the playoffs. And they can't mm-hmm. prove anything until they get there. And yet it does mm-hmm. feel as though, and maybe that's just a byproduct being in Toronto and the way that it is here, where there's so much coverage for this team that, mm-hmm. it just normalized and it never turned out to be that way anyway. But it has been fascinating to me as to how many people have kind of bought in to all those things you've said, how many storylines there have been, how many things mm-hmm. have felt relevant from this regular season. And it's the mm-hmm. start, right? It's the quarter. So now let's pivot to the next thing. Mm-hmm. If we're going to go look at the next quarter, so taking the Leafs with a halfway mark, what do you want to see? Like, what is going to continue to make Jennifer Botterill believe that this team is taking a step towards, when they do get to that playoff opportunity, that things are going to be different?
I think it's building on all of those things and continuing to build on those strengths. You know, I made the comment of the game when Wall played and they had the longest post-game celebration on the ice for him. And I think for them, building on those little moments, but I also think you want to keep your top six flying, right? If those are the leaders of your team, to keep them rolling, to make sure that you get those top six guys flung. I think that's just a big one for consistency throughout the season, because we talked about those things, about Riley in the defense core and Sandin, who stepped up, Lilligren, they've had a great chemistry. So you think about each position, and Campbell's done so well. They're pumped for Wall, who's come in and stepped in when he needed to. And then we talked, yeah, bottom six, yeah, being steady, knowing their role. But then those top six, like, that's a key one for this team, to have your top players, your star players, you know, producing, playing the way that they want to. And that's just a key piece of all of this, to keep your team going for the leadership front and to keep your stars sort of flying offensively. I think that's a big key moving forward.
So I want to spend a little time talking about Team Canada's women's team, obviously, but their hopes at heading into Beijing here. They obviously had a really good run over in Finland. They went 3-0. They come back and they lose both to the United States, one in overtime and one not in overtime. And a little bit of we're mixed opinions on this show. JD's in the camp of it's okay, let them lose now because they can go and hide their stuff. And when they get to the Olympics, they'll
it's
have
50-50. It's yeah. just it's math. It's yes. just math.
And for me, I'm like, I want them to win every single game. So as someone that's been to the Olympics four times, you know exactly what this means, like the leading up to and the whole centralization world that you have to go through. So how are you feeling about Team Canada right now and maybe anything that they can do heading into this crunch time where they have to make the big decisions on the roster?
Yes, well, it's an intense process, the centralization, but it's also an exciting time right now because typically they do name the team in early to mid-December at the latest. So that's coming up quickly. I'm also of the perspective that I don't think it's a terrible thing that they lose a game or two. Obviously, it's fun when you're winning all the games along the road, but I will bring back an example in Salt Lake when we lost eight in a row and then ended up going and on and winning at the Olympic Games, the gold medal final. So I think there are things that you can learn along the way. You know, I saw the team at the Hockey Hall of Fame. There were a number of us that were there, and I had the chance to chat, even with Marie-Philippe Poulin, who's in the heart of it, the team captain. And they seem really great, that the team seems to be really happy with how their development is going. You know, they really seem to have a solid mix. Talk about some young players, Victoria Bock, Sarah Fillier, who are both playing in their top six. They also have a lot of young defensemen that have stepped in from their NCAA careers that are playing really well for them. And even Aaron Ambrose, who's done a great job of now being a big power play player for them on D. So they sort of have a great mix. So in talking to the players, they feel really confident. They're happy with how much they're learning along their way. No, they're not going to be pleased. They're not going to be fired up about losing to the U.S. two times in a row. But overall, in chatting with some of the players, they seem really happy with how the preparation for the Olympic Games are going.
Yeah.
You know, when I was talking about those young players, some of their star players are doing great, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Marie-Philippe Poulin, Spooner's doing well. You know, Sarah Nurse has just been steady for them, you know, battling through an injury. But they've been doing great.
I would just think that in a matchup that's that tight, where it's that intense and it comes down to these little things, having the we're the underdog mentality would actually mm-hmm. be almost an advantage. That you get to go into this thing going, hey, no one believes that we can win because we lost all these games leading up to it. And they think they own us. They think that they're in our heads, blah, 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 that you get that little bit of the underdog edge, that those things matter. And that's why I kind of like when they're losing games. I never want to see Canada lose to the States. If I had it my way, I would just have it that we win every single time and that they fold the program almost. That they're like, we're just so embarrassed. We're going to take a knee on this. But I'm also curious just about, you know, the lead up to these things. Because, Ailish, mm-hmm. how many games? Is it five games before the Olympics? Like,
yeah,
there's three more to go?
They have three more in the States.
Okay, so they've got three mm-hmm. more games to go. And I wonder how that feels just as an athlete who is preparing for this massive matchup. You're playing these games that obviously they count and obviously you're trying, but they're against really the one opponent that you're going to face. Like, it's going to take a miracle for anybody not to have the States or Canada in the Olympic gold medal final. And yeah, it's such a big matchup. It has such big repercussions from a narrative standpoint, from monetary standpoints, from fame, everything. Like, there's huge, huge ripple effects from that game. And yet your lead up is just matchup after matchup after matchup against that same team. How does that feel preparing for that? Do you like that? Do you like that format? Is there another option? Like, what do you do with it?
Well, the reason the format is is okay right now because the U.S. is the strongest competition. I mean, they still play. They played a number of guys' teams throughout this whole process and the months leading up to it. So they have other games that they've been playing in, but these ones are the highest profile, and they are against your biggest competitor. So I will say that it doesn't take much to get fired up to play against the U.S., and they've been playing in great rinks and venues that have been sold out, so they've been, you know, really nice atmospheres for these athletes to play in. And, you know, of course it's their biggest competitor. I will remind you, in Torino, this is many years ago, but we did play Sweden in the final of one Olympic Games, so they are still taking all their opponents very seriously. But the games against U.S., the idea of it's a rivalry, but it's also great for both teams because it does force the players and the teams to play at their best. You want to make sure that you're at your best every time you play them. And there's always, it's the Olympics when you get there, and there's nothing quite like it in terms of the excitement, the energy, the environment, the global attention. But these games leading up to it are a big deal. And for some of these players too, their opportunity to be an Olympic athlete is on the line. And they're, you know, so it's all, the team wants to do well, but there's also individual. You talk about Olympics that can change teams, can change individuals' lives. There's the chance for some players that this is their opportunity to make the roster. So there is a lot of stake, and I would, you know, say that you learn a lot, but each game is very valuable for a lot of different reasons.
So you mentioned you were at the Hall of Fame induction about a week ago. There's been a lot of conversation about who's next, and definitely your name and Carolyn Ouellette's have been kind of in the big conversation of which women should be inducted. Obviously, there's a lot of catching up to do since they've only really started inducting women about 10 years ago. But you are clearly one of the biggest worthy candidates because of your time, even in college, being a two-time winner of the Paddy Kazmaier Award and then everything you've done as a Team Canada athlete. So what would that honor be like? And is it something that you've also marked in the next year as something that could happen for you?
Oh, no. I mean, that's very kind. Thank you for that. But, you know, when I look back at my time, and it was amazing to be there to celebrate with Kim St. Pierre. I played with her for three Olympic Games, and I actually had the chance to play on a line with Carolyn Ouellette for many years in my career. So I just look back, I feel super thankful. I loved my experiences at the Olympics. I loved every chance that I had to put on that Team Canada jersey. I'll call them little moments of appreciation. So for me, when I look back at my career, it's filled with gratitude for the experiences to represent our country, to play with amazing people and teammates that are, and friends that are going to last a lifetime. Like when we were there celebrating Kim St. Pierre, it was just, we've all sort of obviously evolved in our lives, but it's almost like we're right back in that locker room, you know, so many years later. So friendships, and that's what I look back and feel super thankful for.
Yeah, it's a special atmosphere as a women's hockey player. I think that we share those memories and hold on to our teammates a little bit more because we don't play for as many teams, and I think those connections mean a lot. Like even when I go back to school for like alumni weekends, I'm sure it's the same for you. It's really special to get back into that dynamic as a player, and so I can imagine that celebrating someone going to the Hockey Hall of Fame would just be such a special moment. And I do think you will be in there plenty soon.
Wow.
So.
Oh, what a hot take. No, she's definitely.
Voting for you. Someone give me a vote. I'm in there.
No, you're definitely like, you're a fringe
candidate.
You were
very humble,
yeah.
But
yeah,
your name is out there.
You're walking in, yeah. Obviously.
Yes. Anyway, so wonderful to chat with you this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Have a great day. Thank you.
Bye, Jen.
So this Insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. That was Jennifer Botterill, three-time Olympic gold medalist, current Sportsnet analyst, and winner of many, 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 many awards.
Yeah, so she's obviously getting the Hall of Fame.
Yes, I meant next year it's between really her and Carolyn Ouellette, and usually they induct one woman, but I don't see why they can't induct two.
So I just think, yeah, listen, that's a great point. That's a different conversation.
Why do we have one?
Yeah.
Like token woman is.
Well,
throw them in there.
Have
you
they
got
not had a year where they've
no.
had more than one?
No. It's all like, right. Oh, pick one woman, pick 17 men.
So she's obviously going in, not just because of the international tracker, but I was actually kind of laughing when you brought up the Dartmouth thing. You're like, was Dartmouth doing this thing? I was like, hey, Jen Botterill actually like holds the record for scoring in college.
Yeah.
She's
a two-time winner of the Patty Kaz, which is the top women's player, in case you don't know that.
Yeah, she had 319 points in college. Again, the record holder. She's obviously going into the Hall of Fame. It's a walk away, but I just picture her as she's just destroying Dartmouth. She's like, what's Dartmouth doing? Are they doing a song? What are they doing over there? As she's about to be like, I'd like to see her game logs against Dartmouth.
Here's the other thing.
Yeah, this is the best thing.
Jennifer graduated Harvard in 2003.
Yeah.
The song that you guys sang, Ailish, came out in 2006.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I love it. It's a tradition. It runs all the way since 2006.
I like the running thing of Ailish is way younger than us and any guests we
have
on.
Sorry, I didn't have the date of the Dixie Chicks song memorized in my brain Jennifer Botterill's age defensive at Dartmouth and Harvard's rivalry series. I don't know the stats.
It's cool that you're very young and on the show and in this position.
Hey, I would rather be young. Can I tell you that?
I'm too bad. That's my thing.
Yeah, I know. I hate it.
Suck it.
I hate it. I hate it so much. You guys want to take a break?
No.
I have to pee.
Yeah. I mean, plus that leaves us a little more time to talk our weekend betting slate with Cool Bet Chris.
Yeah.
That's coming up after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We are giving you the chance to win Leafs tickets all season long. Today's code word is Marner. Text Marner to 590-590 for your shot to win tickets to the Leafs Avalanche game on December 1st.
The Fan Morning Show. It's Ailish Forfar.
On the aux cord, baby. Little Fall Out Boy.
Yeah.
Am I more than you bargained for yet?
Blake's so mad because this is actually his aux cord, and now he's like, oh, you stepped on my favorite part.
Because that's just who I am this week.
It's not Tom DeLonge.
I don't know who that is.
You're doing like the, you don't know Tom from Blink-182?
Oh, okay.
You're playing all this pop punk and you don't know Blink-182?
I'm not on a first name basis with Tom DeLonge.
No, you are on a first name basis because you didn't know it was his last name you didn't know.
Oh.
You're exclusively on a first name basis
anyway.
With
him.
Now, come on, Ailish.
We're going down, down in an earlier round because sugar, we're going down swinging.
See, I think you should kill
it. That was pretty good.
That was pretty damn good.
So this song, Sugar We're Going Down by Fall Out Boy, a sneaky, difficult karaoke song.
Well, yeah, nobody can have that voice.
Well, Patrick Stump's voice is one thing, but if you're not going to sing any karaoke song of someone with a good voice, you're not going to sing any karaoke song.
That's why I do, this is my United States of whatever, because you just do whatever, and that's kills every time.
But it's also 4 minutes long, and it's quite repetitive at one point. Like, the bridge is just kind of the chorus over and over again. And so I've always had an idea that at karaoke places, there should be a two-minute version of every song.
Yeah. Oh, that's a... Like, I don't know why that's not a thing. I actually, when I was down in Miami, I went to karaoke and there was no...
You did?
Yes, it was awesome. It was packed in.
He's told us about this already.
It was packed
in. Sometimes
I
just don't listen.
There was no stupid glass separating everybody. It was just people in a bar packed in doing karaoke. God, it felt awesome. It felt really good. Really, really, really good. Is Chris there? He's on the line? I don't know what he's doing.
My bets were going down.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Hey, Chrissy. What's up, buddy?
Day.
It's Chris.
What's going on?
Cool Bet Chris.
What's going on?
Nothing, man. You're barely awake. Eh? You're so upset right now. You're so mad. You're like, why didn't I tell Pat to take this week? That's what you're doing right now. Because you're just all hungover. He's at curling events and he's out west. And so he's out there with Hustler just crushing beers guaranteed, losing every bet possible on curling because that's what you always do. And... just now waking up at what time is it there? Is it 7:30 or is it 6:30?
Yeah, it's 7:30. In the province that doesn't do daylight savings time, right? So it actually bails me out a little bit here.
7:30.
Oh my God, we've been up for 7 hours.
Oh, poor guy with his hangover and his lost bets. How you doing? How's Osler?
I'm good. Okay, so one, I was a good boy last night, knowing that I had to to bright-eyed and bushy-tailed with you guys on the radio this morning.
That's dedication.
Yeah. Also, when you're talking karaoke songs, you've got to go, I agree, you got to go with like spoken word ones, JD. So like, I'm a big Tone Loc, Funky Cole Medina, or Wild Thing at the karaoke.
Wild Thing is great because that's one where everyone, you have to sing along. And those are the ones that are the best ones, is that people can't help themselves but jump in on your karaoke song. Mm. Like, there's no offense, Blake, but there's nothing worse than the guy who sings the Fall Out Boy song at the bar and thinks that he's the Fall Out Boy lead singer. And
why are you saying no offense, Blake? I was just saying that that's not a good karaoke song.
I know, but you're the guy who goes up there to show off his range.
No, I'm not a good singer. We've been over this.
But you know who I'm talking about, right? The guy who goes up like three different times at karaoke and is a good singer and wears a tight t-shirt, and you're like, ugh, okay, man, we get it. Just sing in your shower, for God's sakes. Or take Ailish's friend on a date and sing your cover songs for her. Ooh. That was an inside joke.
For
the people of this show. But you're right. No, I think it's all about songs where everybody's participating. Like, that's what you want to have, is where people jump in on the chorus with you. Anyways, what else you want to have is winning bets. And yesterday, mixed bag, Thanksgiving, everybody's doing their thing, whatever. Now it's time to look ahead, though. Do you want to start with best bets? Or do we want to start with everything, or do we want to just jump right into football?
Do what you want to do, man.
Football.
Okay, let's jump right into football. So we've got the Circa Million Dollar Picks contest, and every week we put together our five picks, and we get in our group chat, and it's you, me, Bourne, and Pat Gregoire, and we go and we try to... We put out the lines, and this week was a little weird because three of the games are on Thanksgiving Thursday, and so we can't end up locking any of those. I actually did like the Bills, but whatever. We didn't end up doing it. This is a really strange week, like an unbelievably strange week, because all of the lines are short. I think Blake has a stat on this.
Yeah, there's only one line the rest of the week now that's larger than 4 points.
Wow, that's unbelievable. So it... It really doesn't feel like there's going to be a lot of consensus this week. I feel like everyone is going to be all over the map because you're picking sides of very, very short lines. This feels like just multiple coin toss games.
Well, I'm happy about it because I was getting a little bit tired of the 14 and 17 point spread. But there's some teams that are probably getting a little too much respect. Like, there's some bad football teams out there. Like Jacksonville, I don't care if they're playing Atlanta. They shouldn't be like such a short dog. The Giants are bad. You know, there's some bad football teams out there. So, there could be some good opportunities for short favorites this week.
Yeah, so that's I was going to ask you about a couple of those teams in particular. So we have a game like Texans -2.5 hosting the Jets, or we have the Falcons -2 at the Jaguars. What was the other one I had? There are a handful of short lines with bad teams. Mm-hmm. And this year has been difficult to predict in general.
You're probably thinking either Panthers, Dolphins, or Eagles.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah, the Panthers only being 2-point favorites at Miami. Do you see this as a bit of like the market throwing its hands up at how inconsistent and unpredictable the bottom of the league has been week to week? Like this week just strikes me, these games don't stand out as like interesting competitive games. They stand out instead to me as, well, we have no idea what these teams are going to be week to week, so here's a short line.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that. Like, the underdogs have covered at an unbelievable clip so far this year. And normally we say, it'll even itself out as the year goes on, and it hasn't really, you know, there hasn't been these great weeks for favorites. So part of that, yeah, I think you're right. It's the market being like, all right, well, maybe the favorites will cover at lower numbers. And that's a simple way of breaking it down. The other thing is, there's a lot of teams that have underperformed recently that should be bigger favorites, like Tampa Bay. Who have they been for the last 3 or 4 weeks? Like, it hasn't been good. That's a tricky line. Indy at home. Like, so you want to say, yeah, Indianapolis getting 3 at home, they've been really good. But then Tom Brady, maybe he comes out and he's Tom Brady again. So, yeah, I think picks will be all over the map this week. But, you know, I actually kind of like Houston at home -2.5. At least they've looked like they've gotten a little bit better. And the Jets are the Jets, and they're very Jetsing right now. So, I'm inclined to these teams that have just been absolute disasters lately, like the Giants. And I mean, that one's tricky to me because Philly has been good lately and only minus 3.5. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of head scratchers on the board for sure.
I actually like the Giants this weekend, but this just speaks to where everybody else is at. Like the Freddie Kitchens bump, the fact that they're getting a new OC in here, that they just kind of hit rock bottom, that they are at home. It is a divisional game, that it's 3.5 points. I know home field hasn't meant much this week. It just, that's one that I keep being suspicious of, the team that's like, oh, this team's good? This NFL season, if it's taught us anything, it's that as soon as you believe that a team is good, you're wrong. Then it makes you feel like an idiot. And so that's why I'll be honest, I kind of hate this week just because I've hated a lot of weeks. I've hated betting on the NFL this year just kind of in general because it's been so unbelievably up and down. And the it hasn't even felt like parody so much as it's been like egg laying by a lot of teams where you go, what is this? This isn't like some other team elevated their play. It's some other team ended up lowering theirs. So I think there's a bunch of stayaways for me. But I will say this. This is the one game that I feel actually confident about where I look at it and go, how is this the way that it is? Rams, Packers. The Packers should not be, it's a pick 'em, but you can bet the Packers at plus 100 on the money line. I don't get this at all. I really don't understand the market's love of the Rams. I don't understand the public's love of the Rams. They lost Robert Woods, and they replaced him with a wide receiver who actually hasn't been relevant outside of his name for, 4 years? They don't have this juggernaut offense. There's a reason why Cooper Kupp is getting this MVP discussion stuff, and it's because he's far and away the most important player on that offense. It's like it's a one-receiver offense with a quarterback who, frankly, has looked mediocre this year. And I think that's being kind of friendly to Matthew Stafford, calling him mediocre this year, because at the beginning he was nice, and then he's sort of leveled out here. I look at this matchup and say, I like the head coach just as much as I like the head coach of the Rams. I like the quarterback infinitely more. I like the way that that Packers defense is playing infinitely more. They're just a more balanced team. I think A.J. Dillon looks good. I don't like the rushing attack at all of the Rams. I don't get this one. This one just feels wrong to me. And those usually scare me because I feel like the Packers should be more favored in this game. And I don't really have an explanation as to why the Rams are the pick 'em favorites in this one. Like, it makes no sense to me. I love the Packers here.
The only question I have then is Aaron Rodgers' toe worse than it they're letting on? Like, is he not playing now?
The guy lost a football game and he cried about his toe. That's the story here to me. It's like, does it hurt? Probably. Did he look great in that football game? Yes. He was balling out of control in that football game.
Yeah, sorry you missed the coffee table in the dressing room.
Is there a player that's gone from pretty likable to not likable at all faster?
I never liked him. I've always hated his guts.
Different spin on that game, though. The over-under at 47.5.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like an over. Mm. I know you're Mr. Unders.
I'm actually Mr. Overs, but this season...
It's projected at 49, not 47.5. So it's tight, but...
Mm. There's just something. There's just something about this season where it has been road teams winning and unders hitting. And those have been the like, if we're looking for consistency... Those have been the consistent things. And I don't know if I'm letting those get in my head too much, but that's where I'm at with it, where I'm always kind of hesitant with these overs. I'll be honest. If I was going to play one side there, Blake, I'd probably lean towards the over. But to me, just the bet is the Packers, and that's my number one submission for the Circa contest this week, is I don't know how we pass on the Packers against that Rams team that feels like they're on the verge of being called frauds.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I just checked the weather. The weather in Green Bay for Sunday looks, fine. Cold, but no snow and not super freezing, like above 0 Celsius. So, I think that's – I do too. That's why I'm a little bit nervous about it. But, the line in the contest is a pick 'em. It's moved to +1 for Green Bay in betting. So,
Well, also you have
Stafford. Cashing in on that one.
You also have Stafford versus Rodgers. And I know that this feels new because Stafford is with a new team, but I'm sorry. There's just got to be something to that Packers team looking across and seeing Matthew Stafford and going, haven't we beat this guy like our whole lives? Hasn't our quarterback beat this guy his entire career? And go, he has. So let's just go out and win this football game. So I love the Packers there. The rest of it, honestly, I feel like I'm going to flip-flop all the way up until – it's 1 o'clock on Sunday. Like on paper, I like the Chargers -2.5 at the Broncos. I don't know. That one feels like it's a little short considering I was doing the whole narrative buy-in of the Chargers have put the ghosts of the past behind them. But if Herbert goes out there and throws 3 interceptions and the Broncos win some like close game, I guess I can't be shocked, but I would say Chargers are one of the other ones that I'm leaning on when I look at the lines.
I'd agree with you. I mean, the Chargers had a little bit of a dip, right? And they've been a little bit better last week or so. So, but the Broncos have been another team this year that, oh, they look great. Oh, my God, they're terrible. So, yeah, you know, it fits with the whole theme of the entire week. But I agree. They should be the better team in this game. And I'm with you on the Chargers.
I just want to throw numbers at a couple of the things JD just mentioned there, just so people can quantify it. The first of all, the unders, we're at 57% unders on the year for the entire NFL. We're also, away dogs are still winning, or still covering at a 63% clip.
That's what I'm saying.
And then even the away favorites, which is the Chargers game, are coming through at 52%. So the away trend is not letting up at all. And the under trend, obviously, it's an over-under. It's a little difficult to nail down, but 57% unders. So,
how are you feeling about the line on your Seahawks? Plus one.
Can I be honest?
That is tight.
I think if you bet this game, which I will.
Yes. You're a degenerate?
Yeah, you're sick. And I'm sick.
You're sick.
And I will die. I don't normally bet on my team, and I'm definitely not going to submit them for Circa. But I look at this and say, Seattle to me looks broken. They look completely shattered. And Washington, despite having no Chase Young, and I don't see how Terry McLaurin's not going to go off for a billion yards against that Seahawks secondary. And I actually am in a weird spot where I don't think the Seahawks offense can keep up with Tyler Heinicke. He's one of the Tyler. What are those two things, Heinicke? I don't think that they could do
Taylor.
Yeah.
So go ahead. No. You're up.
No, I mean, I think your Seahawks are in a lot of trouble, JD. Like, Pete Carroll looks like he's forgotten how to do it. Did you guys see the clip where one of the players told him, like, hey, coach, you got to calm down? He, like, snaps back, and he's like, no, I won't calm down. I'll do whatever I want. I'm like, oh, this is a healthy relationship.
The thing I found interesting about this, why I brought it up, is the Seahawks were favored by 3.5 points on the road in Washington, and now the spread swung 4.5 points in the opposite direction, which is a pretty major development, I thought. So I just wanted to see how our Seahawks fan was feeling about that.
Yeah, I just think they suck. And I've said it before, but they're in the worst spot where they don't even have their first-round pick this year. And now I'm in these desperate places where, you know, you should never want your team to trade a franchise quarterback. And I know Russ hasn't really looked that way for a lot of this season and for a lot of the second half of last year. So there's maybe some reason to doubt where he's at in his career and his size and a lot of different stuff. And there's some numbers as to his ability to throw into the middle of the field that become a little bit more of a problem if he's not the quarterback that we've seen outside of the pocket throughout his career. I would just say that it's a bad state as a fan when you are even open to the idea of trading a franchise quarterback. Like, that is as low as it gets. Like, that is low, 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 because that matters more than anything else in football. And we keep learning that over and over and over again. So is there anything else that you would like to pitch? Does anyone else have like something that they feel strongly about that is a must play on the NFL card, Ailish?
It's the only thing that has a big enough spread that I'm interested in is Titans plus six against the Patriots. I know I've been talking about how the Patriots have been really good over the last couple of weeks, but I'm kind of willing for them to not be good because of my Bills. So this one intrigues me a bit because the Titans, they've had their share of issues, but they've been good as an underdog this year. So I like this game. I like this game because I want the Patriots to blow it.
Blake's not with you.
He doesn't feel that way.
It's just, anytime that the justification includes the word want, it's a yellow flag.
It's an amber flag.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there is probably a little bit of value on Tennessee at that spread. Like, I think that's the projected spread there is 4.5, like in terms of expectation, not the line. So there is maybe 2 points of edge there.
Titans are plus 240 on the money line.
Yeah. So I think the move for you, especially with Patriots Bills next week, is to, you know, before you click place bet on your cool bet, just like take stock. Do you think it's going to happen, or are you just trying to will the Bills
both
half a game up in the standings? Either's fine.
All I need to say to the group here is Google Titans injury report. You look at their team right now, and they are beat up. Like, beat up, beat up, beat up. And if A.J. Brown doesn't play in this game, he has not practiced. We'll see if he practices today, but he hasn't practiced this week. If A.J. Brown doesn't play, they're down their top three receivers.
They're also down three linebackers.
Yeah, and they're also down their starting running back and their identity of their team. And if
potentially
you
look, back, like Jeremy McNichols, I don't think has returned to practice yet.
He has not. And so, and Donta Foreman is also on the injury report. So you're looking at Adrian Peterson, two other beat up running backs, and your fourth, fifth, and sixth wide receivers with Ryan Tannehill against Bill Belichick. I'll just say this. I love that Patriots money line. It's like, I just don't see, maybe they don't cover, maybe that 6.5, like Blake, you just said the 4.5 value. Ailish, you know, you like to respect the Titans a bit. I will say that in terms of throwing onto my money line teases this week and feeling confidence of everybody sucks this year or who is actually good and who's about to fall off a cliff, Patriots money line is like my, I'm putting it on everything of the week.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Mike Vrabel has had a lot of success against Bill Belichick, but I don't think he has the horses this week. So I'm with you. I think it's a great teaser or money line parlay spot. I like that with the Vikings 49ers over tease at like 43. I think there's going to be a lot of points. And I think there's going to be a lot of points in that game
too. I like that too. I heard a stat today about how Trent Brown is basically like putting up numbers in the run game that no left tackle has ever had. And again, I always, whenever I hear these numbers, I'm like, when did we start doing this? What year was this started? Well, who's quantifying this? How are they calibrating this? But the Niners offense, granted, against some not great opponents, and I know the Rams should be one, but they've just owned them. The rushing attack looks back. And if the running game is anything close to what they have been the last couple of weeks, I think that you're right, that could be some points in that game. I don't mind it. Is there anything... okay, Chris, I told you have to bring this for me. So we got curling trials today. And you're down there. 2021 Tim Horton's curling trials. Curling lines are usually just nutso, where sometimes you have, like, Kevin Cooey, for example, is a minus 769 favorite, so I'm putting money on the other guy because this is just ridiculous, some of these things.
Yeah, what?
Also, like,
I don't believe that there's that big of a gap between any professional curlers. Like, I just don't.
Also, but Gunlaugsson's just a cool name.
Yeah, it is a good
name. Probably not pronouncing that all the way accurately, but...
But is there anything today, because I know you and Hustler hit a parlay a couple of days ago that I played. Is there anything, have you guys talked about your plays today? Have you looked already ahead at the slate? Like, what have you done so far with these curling lines? Because I told you got to bring me one.
Yeah, well, some of these, so this first slate of games is starting at 10 Eastern. It's very circumstantial this week, this draw, because a lot of teams are already eliminated, right? So Kevin Cooey's still gunning for the playoffs, and Jason Gunnlaugsson is out. One thing with Gunnlaugsson is he plays a lot of high risk shots. There's usually a lot of points in his games. His games have gone over all week. So, it has been a 12.5. It's moved up to 13. So that might be something I like. But Blake, to your point, like Gunnlaugsson is +3.5. I mean, you don't get a whole lot of curling games that are bigger than 4 points in the difference. So that could be something to consider, for the underdog there as well.
There's no way.
John Epping's team playing for his life against an eliminated Brendan Botcher. Botcher has been very, very good. But I do like Epping +1.5 in a parlay at -179 somewhere. They still have a chance to push for the playoffs today. And then I expect a lot of points in the Tanner Horgan, Matt Dunstone game. Both teams eliminated. Horgan, a team just out of junior, and they've had some big scores against them this week. So those are a couple of things I'm looking at.
First of all, I love this, and I'm going to play all these, even though you've steered me wrong ever since the start of showing me curling betting. I've lost so much money on curling because of Chris, and just because of him. It's not even his fault. It's just him making me aware of curling betting, and I love betting favorites, and I always think, like, of course this. But I also love the idea of curlers where they go, hey, we're already eliminated or we're already in it. Like, let's not try. It's like, it's curling. It's not like you have to get up, you know, just grind out physically. It's not a football game where you have to make a decision about a big tackle. It's like,
do think the one interesting point of that, of being an eliminated team is, in that Cooey matchup, you're against the team that's already pretty risk seeking. And then they're probably just, I mean, you're going for the upset, right? Yeah. Like, that's, I'm sure the wins matter for in other ways, but like, mostly you're trying to pull that upset off.
Listen, I love it. Like I said, I'm making
you want that SportsCenter highlight.
Yes.
Brad Gushue has one loss this week, and it's to Jason Gummickson. Now, Gushue's already through to the playoff, right? And then one other thing, guys, I know we're a little short on time, but Jen Jones and Tracy Fleury are both already clinched the 1-2 seeds, but they have a round-robin game tonight. Or this afternoon, and the total's at 13.5. I'm thinking they're just going to want to get that over with, so I like under 13.5.
Okay, so yeah, I'll make sure you tweet these out later today. Again, at CoolBackChris. And if you ever want to play any of these lines, you want to check out the site, just shoot a DM. We got promo codes for you. Before we go, before we wrap this up, Blake, is there anything? It's a heavy NBA slate tonight because everybody was off yesterday for American Thanksgiving. Is there anything that pops to you right away when you look at this card tonight?
The first thing I'll say is just because people have been chasing it and tracking it, if the homers parlay tonight pays 375,
love it.
That's Raptors 140 money line and Leafs minus 102 in regulation. Generally, if you're going homers parlay, I like the regulation play a little better just because you get a little more juice on a two leg. NBA slate, I don't know. I mean, it's a weird one too because nobody practiced yesterday, so we don't have injury report updates. I do like the Raptors on the road at the Pacers if OG plays, but again, you're waiting on that one. The Thunder plus 7.5. The Wizards have started coming back down to earth a little bit, and the Thunder, while not good, have been cover machines. So them at home with like a decent size spread against a team that sputtered a little bit, I'll probably look to play that one. And yeah, those are the ones that stand out the most. I mean,
I like Denver.
Golden State as a 6.5-point home favorite, even against Portland right now. Like, there's not a line you can give me on the Warriors lately that, especially at home, that I'm not looking at closely.
Denver, when they are underdogs at home, cover something stupid like 80% of the time. It is one of the number one, hey, if you get these opportunities, you take them. And I know it's the Bucks, and I know it's on rest, but I actually look at that one and say, that is one where Jokic knows who he's playing against. And that is a high, like, this is a get up game for everybody else on that team. And I know that
he is questionable, though.
Yeah, he's going to play.
I thought that in the last one, too, and had to pull the bet.
But that's the thing. He was right on the cusp of playing, and they end up not playing him. And I swear, I think they held him out knowing that they were going to get that extra day and that they were going to be facing Giannis at home. I just look at a guy who, if Jokic has any hope of winning MVP this season, this is the kind of game that he actually has to have a big performance in. This is the kind of game that he has to win. And I think that guy cares about this kind of stuff. And so I like Denver here. If he plays, obviously I'm going to wait. I'm not going to play this one immediately. Don't rush out and grab it. But I would say that if Jokic does get announced that he's playing, that plus 3.5, I'm definitely eyeing that up tonight. Like, that's the NBA one that I'm looking at. Chris, Coolback Chris, the man who is down watching the curling all day long. So follow him at Coolback Chris. You'll get those curling picks. He and Hustler are going to try to give us some more winners, winners, winners. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon.
See you, pal. Go back to sleep for your 20-minute nap before you have to go to the curling rink.
All right. So homers parlays, and then we'll touch on once more right before we go.
Well, I'm doing the homers parlay as we speak. Of course you are.